This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Thank you very much, moderator. As I have been already introduced, my name is Godson Gaja from Botswana Open University. Please allow me to share my slide by thanking you once again. And I would like also to extend my gratitude to the Vice Chancellor of Mangosuthu University of Technology, Mbali Mkize, and staff for extending an invitation to me to share some insights into the marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa. You will note that I've prefaced indigenized peoples of Africa because this is an area that is highly contested in Africa by governments and other individuals who also regard themselves as indigenous. Actually, any African is taken to be indigenous in Africa. So for the purposes of this session, I differentiate marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa from the mainstream indigenous peoples of Africa. Just to appreciate, this was shown by the African Union last year. You can see Africa is a beautiful continent, and it's so big such that it can actually accommodate a number of big countries like China, India, USA, Spain, and France, just for your appreciation. And Africa is a home for over 3,000 tribes and 200,000 languages. That's the beauty of Africa in terms of its diversity. As we are here about the Africa Day, you will recall that the African Organization of Unity, now OU, started on this day in 1963. The vision is that of an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa, driven by its own citizens and representing a dynamic force in the global arena. The question is, as OU strives hard to achieve this vision, are the marginalized who continue to suffer abject poverty, discrimination, injustices, are they going to share in this African prosperity, peace, and when? Recently, in 2015, our national gathering of heads of state in Addis Ababa decided on the agenda, on the AU Agenda 2063, the Africa we want, with a vision of inclusive growth, sustainable development that relies on the potential of African people. This is a beautiful vision that all Africans aspire to by 2063, the Africa we want. It's, however, too early to tell to what extent the marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa will be accommodated as we journey through to 2063. On this special day, we need to acknowledge the significance of Africa Day, that is, independence, freedom, getting rid of apartheid, and aspiring to have the kind of cultural unity and common heritage that is linked to pre-colonial times and post-colonial times. In terms of Africa, as I noted, there are a lot of challenges, and these challenges date back to colonial days and even after post-colonial independence. The challenges, as indicated in the slides, relate to education, health, access to land and natural resources, recognition by dominant groups and the state, and access to fair justice. In terms of education, the marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa hardly participate because they live in deeply remote areas where there are no schools. Some of the marginalized communities, like in Kenya, in Nigeria, who are pastoralists, you find that governments and other non-governmental institutions engage in what we call nomadic education, because they are pastoralists. They move from one place to another on a seasonal basis. And in terms of healthy services, they are underserved because of either they are in deeply marginalized context where it's very difficult to reach. And in terms of land, obviously, the commercialization of land and natural resources has meant that they are literally removed from their ancestral lands. And in terms of recognition by dominant groups, this really affects their human dignity. And the African governments, because as I have indicated, they indicate that all Africans are indigenous, and the issue of marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa is taken as a serious, a sensitive issue. And in terms of justice, because where they live, it's a challenge in the sense that the judiciary services do not reach them. So, as I have indicated, marginalization is highly contested by various minority groups and major groups who face similar hardships like the marginalized indigenous communities. And the question is, has there been a difference in the quality of life from the colonial days to post-independence for marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa? To appreciate who are the marginalized people, I have indicated that these are people who occupy a region, or who occupied a region before other ethnic groups arrived. We know of the Bantu migrations, and these are the people who have very strong links with the ancestral land, and as I have indicated, they are already marginalized and discriminated by the dominant groups and the state, and they declare their self-identity as marginalized. And as I have indicated, the question of who is an indigenous is a highly contested one, as African governments are of the view that if you are an African, you are an indigenous. However, for our case today, as I have indicated, I differentiate the marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa from other indigenous people by prefixing indigenous by marginalized. I would like now to take you through a journey of pictures for you to appreciate the beauty and diversity of Africa. For Botswana, Namibia, and South Africa, normally we share borders, and most of the indigenous people are the San and the Khoisan. These are hunter-gatherers. However, of late, they've been relocated to various settlements, and in those settlements, they basically live the life where they are given food rations by, for instance, in Botswana, by the government, takes full care of them. It's the same in Namibia, where we have the San and the Himba and the Khoisan. Then in Tanzania, we have the Maasai, Wagali, and Somali. These are mainly cattle headers. And in Tanzania, we have the San. At the bottom left, those are the San of the Republic of Tanzania. Then in the Democratic Republic of Congo, we have the Pygmies. Unfortunately, the term Pygmy is taken to be derogatory in other parts of Central Africa, particularly in the Republic of Congo, Brazzaville. However, in DRC, it is accepted. In Uganda, we have the Bwindi, the Eke, and other indigenous people. And most of these Batwa and other indigenous people are spread across Central Africa, including DRC, Kenya, Rwanda and Burundi. Then in Ethiopia, we have the Danaseka, Omo Valley tribes. These are mainly fishermen, but otherwise we also have pastoralists in Ethiopia. Then in Nigeria, we have a number of indigenous people, and these include the Fulani, who are the pastoralists, the cattle headers. That was a short journey in pictures. And I would like us to look at key protocols or instruments that the African Union has actually designed. These protocols or instruments are meant to promote and protect the human and people's rights, the indigenous people. We have the African Charter on the Human and People's Rights, and this established the Commission, the African Commission on Human and People's Rights. The African Charter on Human and People's Rights is also referred to as the African Charter. And it is a key document which defines the framework for the protection of human rights throughout Africa. It got into place since 1986, October 21. It guarantees civil political rights throughout Africa. And as I have indicated, the African Charter, SWEC, is undertaken by the African Commission on Human and People's Rights. The African Commission promotes and protects human and people's rights. It interprets the charter. Individuals can file a complaint to the commission whenever they feel their rights have been violated. However, prior to filing a complaint, they must first go through all other available domestic judicial procedures. And the question is, the marginalized indigenous communities in the Kalahari Desert, will they be or are they able to actually undertake such procedures where they move to Kimberley Court or Johannesburg. Similarly, the sand in the Central Kalahari Game Reserve in Botswana, are they able to file such complaints of any of their violation by any entity, including government, to the African Commission on Human and People's Rights? First, they don't have the cash power to actually engage legal or attorneys. And this leaves the marginalized indigenous San and other groups to be manipulated by international organizations, for instance, like Survival International, to actually end up bringing about conflict, serious conflict, between the marginalized indigenous communities and government. We will see when I talk about a few cases. Then the other critical document from the AU is the Protocol to African Charter on Human Rights and People's Rights on the establishment of the African Court on Human and People's Rights. The court has actually been able to function. For instance, in October 2009, a complaint was brought by groups, international groups, about what the Kenyan Forest Service had actually done, and the court attended to that case. It was a case against the government of Kenya and Ojike community, who had been served with eviction notice from their ancestral lands, that is the Mau forests. However, they came to court, and this was actually debated in court, and the Ogeke community actually won that court after there was evidence that they were not adequately consulted. There was another case again in Botswana where Basarwa, or the SEN, actually took the government to court with the assistance of Survival International. And in that case, the court ruled in favor of the SEN, the Basaru. And then we have another case in the Republic of South Africa that followed the South African Restitution of Land Rights Act 22 of 1994. The communities that were involved here were the Komani San, the Ku and Kwi San, and were granted the 2,900 hectares of the land they were actually demanding in May 1999. And again, approximately 3,000 Nama people sought to reclaim 85,000 hectares of land from a diamond mine in the area of Richardsville in South Africa. The case was brought to court, and the South African government decided otherwise and settled the claim out of court, with reparations being paid of approximately 27 million, along with guarantees of former land control and environmental restoration. These are just but a few of the cases that I just wanted to highlight. Another case which was brought to the court was that of the Endoroids Council, which they were actually contesting the matter of land violation with the Kenyan government. And the court issued judgment stating that the government of Kenya was in violation of the African Charter of Human Rights and People's Rights. This case represents the first legal recognition of indigenous peoples' rights over traditionally owned land and their right to development under the African Charter. That is the case of Endoroids Welfare Council and the Republic of Kenya. What is of interest also is what has happened in the Republic of Congo or Congo Brazzaville. This is the only country in Africa that has recognized the marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa. And they actually made policies that actually support and promote the quality of life of the marginalized. For instance, in 2015, the Republic of Congo, in its constitution, did recognize the indigenous peoples, and the law guarantees and provides promotion and protection of the rights of the pygmies in Congo Brazzaville. On December 30, 2010, the Republic of Congo introduced the indigenous law. Hence, we say it is the first sub-Saharan Africa to approve legislation for the protection of the indigenous people. At this stage, I still ask the question, are the marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa downtrodden, or has their agenda changed? My view, given the suffering of the marginalized indigenous peoples of Africa across the continent, the marginalized indigenous are still downtrodden. Their agenda has not changed in terms of their practical quality of life. They have encountered discrimination, lack of civil status, lack of rights to land and forest and natural resources. They have encountered land dispossession, poverty, inadequate health and education, inequality, lack of access to justice, and hence they rely on international Western funding and aspects, and they lack public participation at local level in some countries. At least in Botswana, we now have a representation at local level, but we don't have representation at parliamentary level. So the indigenous peoples of Africa, the marginalized ones, are basically downtrodden, and the agenda has not changed, despite efforts that the African Union is actually making. I will conclude with those remarks, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. Thank you, moderator.
Thank you. I think we're going to move straight to Professor Jane Ilioanya to share with us a presentation on infusing Africanness in the methodologies of instruction in teacher education. Over to you, Prof.
Afternoon, everyone. I use this opportunity to thank the Vice Chancellor of MUT and the other senior management members of staff for organizing this very important event to mark our African Day. And thank you for inviting me to be a speaker on this very important day. My name is Jane. I'm from Botho University in Botswana. I decided to go by the sub-theme of reclaiming our Africanness. Reclaiming our Africanness. Because this is the theme that resonates well with my topic and the message that I have today of the African Union Day. We look at the curriculum, and the best way to approach this topic, the best way to approach this is to start by next day asking ourselves the question, what do we mean by Africanness? So I would like to start by asking ourselves the question, what do we mean by Africanness? So many definitions have been given to the term Africanness. From my own point of view, Africanness has more to do with the character and commitment to the African identity. Africanness should not be restricted to the geographical boundaries where one finds oneself. I see Africanness as something that comes from the heart. If you have decided to see yourself as an African, you own to that identity and be proud of being an African without fear or favor. Next, I have the following questions. Next, please. In addressing my presentation, since I went for the theme, Reclaiming Our Africanness, we have to pause and look at this. Have we lost our African identity in any way? Is it in the way we speak, the way we portray ourselves, our attitude, the language, our character? If we have lost our African identity in any way, are we prepared to reclaim it? Then how best can we reclaim our African identity? I have to say that if we need to reclaim our African identity and to Africanize our school curriculum, one thing we have to appreciate, the people at the implementation phase of the curriculum. And the people at the implementation phase of the curriculum, we have very important group of people. They are known as the teachers. And for us to instill the spirit of Africanness in our school curriculum, we have to think about the teachers we train. Next, please. How do we train our teachers? Next. How do we train our teachers? How do we make them understand the importance of being an African in the methodologies of instruction? Not just the curriculum, the way we deliver the curriculum. Because when we train our teachers to appreciate the importance of being Africans, then it will go a long way in helping the students they teach to appreciate the same mission of being Africans. What informed my presentation include the ideologies and principles which I got from a number of African countries' national education policy. We have such principles as social harmony, democracy, unity, development, self-reliance, Boto, and Ubuntu. These are ideologies and principles which we have to harness in training our student teachers, so that when they come out and start practicing as professional teachers, they will be able to inculcate these ideas through the methodologies of teaching the children put under their care. Let's look at social harmony. Next. Social harmony was derived from the Botswana's education policy. Next, of 1977, the first education policy after Botswana regained independence. I could call this the first indigenous education policy. The principle of social harmony, the philosophy, emphasizes on the need for everybody to live in peace, respect for one another, mutual assistance, mutual responsibility, and social justice. These African concepts should be emphasized on when we train our teachers. Our teachers should know about the importance of social harmony when we train them, because teachers deliver. Teachers should live by examples. Teaching is a noble profession. And those who represent that noble profession, who are Africans, should have those African ideals that will help to carry on the name of Africa in a positive way, rather than the negative impressions we get about Africa. So these principles will guide in training our teachers and producing the type of teachers that we could be proud of as Africans. Next. We look at the principle of democracy. Democracy has different meanings. But in education and in the spirit of community engagement, we look at democracy as communities where people are reasonable. They are inclusive. They are affirming. They are just and caring. As a teacher educator, I know that it is very important for teachers to appreciate the importance of democratic principles, where when they are teaching the students, they appreciate individual differences, individual opinions, so that people will come to a reasonable conclusion. They should be inclusive. Nobody should be discriminated against. So our teachers should know this. It's not just about going into the classroom to deliver content. How do we deliver the content in the spirit of Africanness? If we look at the old African days, communities, people did not even fence their houses. We were living together. Where has that gone to? Who should we blame? That is why I'm talking about reclaiming Africanness in the spirit of the African nations we used to know. People might have their intertribal wars, but we lived together, we communicated, we assimilated, we accommodated one another. So now, for us to decolonize the curriculum, we have to start by instilling the spirit of Africanness in the teachers we train. Who will be the ones that will be at the implementation phase of the curriculum? Next to democracy, we have the principle of development. This is a very important principle that will help to drive our teacher education programs towards producing teachers that have the spirit of Africanness and are ready to portray that in the ways they relate with the learner. Development is about individual growth. How do we enable our student teachers, the people we teach to become teachers, to grow individually, to acquire that knowledge, the competencies that will lead to societal growth? Any curriculum theorists like Tyler, William K. Patrick, they believe that every curriculum should be directed towards the growth of the students and the growth of the society. And what society are we talking about here now? It's not the African society. Are our students being educated in the ways that will help them to promote our African ideas? These are important questions we have to look at, think about, and know the importance of educating our student teachers who will eventually come out to become trained and professional teachers to carry on with these African ideals of development in the right direction, the African way of appreciating one another, helping one another instead of pulling down. Appreciating ours as something that we should be proud of. From development, the principle of self-reliance. This is one principle that is easily misunderstood. People think that when we talk about self-reliance, we are saying we should be on our own. We do not want to associate with other people. No. Self-reliance in this context, in the spirit of promoting Africanness in our teacher education programs, should be geared towards working hard to be able to have a living, earn a living without being too dependent on others. Maintaining the spirit of Africanness, not just maintaining the spirit of Africanness, being true to it, being proud of our African identity, the language and the character. What is happening to our system now? Some people are not even proud of the indigenous African languages they are associated with. I give a good example with Botswana, where I live. In the primary schools, at the junior primary level, subjects are taught using Setswana, the local language. And those who feel that they cannot go to the government public schools, they could send their children to the English medium schools. But this emphasis on training them at the junior level, the foundation level, with the local language, is a good way of promoting our African identity. The Japanese use their language in schools, and any other thing they do, the French people do the same, the Chinese. Why can't we be proud of ours? Why can't we be proud of ours? It's even, you know, a kind of, I'm sorry to say, a shame that sometimes people can't even speak their own native languages at home. So if we are promoting Africanness, we have to look at all these. What kind of examples do we use when we teach in class? Do we use examples of indigenous and marginalized African groups like the Basarwa, the Fulani, or the others? Or we go and look for foreign examples that students may not even understand. In education, when you want to teach effectively, you start from the known to the unknown. If I am teaching, for example, the topic on fruits, why not I start with the African fruits that the children that I'm teaching, or the students, even adults, know about, before I go and use another example? So these are the things we have to look at. Are we really self-reliant in the way we think? Are we really portraying that Africanness in the way we carry ourselves? So this should be inculcated in the teachers we teach as student teachers, so that when they come out, they deliver the right message to the people. that are put under their care as learners. From self-reliance, we go to the next important principle, J. J, unity. Unity is a very important principle in the recognition of national unity and pride. Look at the first name of given to the current AU, OAU, Organization of African Unity. So in promoting the spirit of Africanness in our teacher education programs, we should emphasize on the importance of unity. Africa, as the first speaker said, is made up of diverse nations, different types of indigenous groups. But we have to be united. We have to be united. What I call, we should have a sense of unity in diversity. No matter how diverse we are, no matter the number of ethnic groups we are, we have, we need to be united. And this starts from the school system. Are we recognizing this in our teacher education program? What kind of teachers are we producing? The teachers that know, understand the principle of unity as something that will bind Africa, and that's something that will promote the spirit of Africanness, will be able to inculcate that in the learners when they are employed as professional teachers. We cannot achieve anything in the spirit of Africanness if we do not have this principle of unity binding us, guiding us in whatever we do, to know that any cause we are fighting for a common cause, and the cause should be a peaceful one. So this is one of the principles we have to promote in our teacher education programs in order to promote the African ideals of united we stand, divided we fall. Next, we go to another important principle. These two principles, call them principles, call them ideologies, call them ethics. I appreciate these two a lot. Both represents the Botswana principles for driving their philosophy, and the Ubuntu represents the South African principle. They both mean the same thing. Ubuntu has become even a continental ideology. Both the tenets of African culture. The concept of a truly educated person who has a well-rounded character is well-mannered, courteous, and disciplined. Boto demands that individuals in the society should earn respect by first giving it, and we empower others by empowering ourselves. We also empower others. Have we lost this African spirit of a well-rounded character? We should instill this, inculcate this in training our teachers, so that when they come out, they do the right thing. Next, Ubuntu, as I have said, J. Next, Ubuntu, as I have said, is a South African ideology that has become known worldwide. It is very popular. And this is an African thing. Hence my question, have we lost our Africanness? How do we reclaim this? These ideas are there. Ubuntu is, the tenets of Ubuntu are relevant to both interpersonal harmony, human-centeredness, teamwork, collaboration. This African Day celebration was organized by an African university. And we are here now collaborating, doing things together in the spirit of promoting Africanness. These ideas should not just be in the curriculum or curricula, if you want to use plural. We should be able to practice this through the methodologies of instruction. When we train our student teachers, we let them know that they are not here just to learn content. They are here to know the theory and put into practice what they have learned. Jay, next. That is very, very important. Jay, please, next. Ubuntu and Boto ethics, as I have said, can be used to establish cordial and viable human relations in organizations such as schools. We are here now, so in that spirit of Ubuntu. So, the question is the role of the teacher educators in infusing Africanness in our teacher education programs and the benefits of doing such cannot be overemphasized. When we train our teachers, we should let them know, understand the African ideals of Ubuntu, Boto, which will lead to other ideals, which are connected to other ideals, principles, such as development, unity, democracy, and self-reliance. When all these are combined,
this is an NUT Radio podcast.